Hello, and thank you for joining Kansas Rural Center Presents. In this episode, I spoke with native Kansan and investigative journalist Carrie Gillum. If you are one of the more than 1,000 people that joined us for the Common Ground screening, you may be recently familiar with her work. While we discuss the film, most of this conversation is centered around Carrie's work in the ag sector. Links from this episode will be in the show notes. Enjoy. But seeing the film, I was really impressed by how farmers weren't vilified, but there was truly shown kind of the handcuffs that they're in.
Definitely. Very definitely. Yeah. I don't know if you probably haven't had a chance to read my books or any of my books, but my first book, Whitewash, I devoted it to farmers or dedicated it to farmers. And I have a quote about farmers, but that's very much my perspective from covering agriculture since 1998. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if you know my background. I spent 17 years at Reuters, and that was my assigned beat, was the agro beat and cash markets, as well as the futures, as well as like on the ground, you know, what was happening, environmental issues and agricultural advances and that sort of thing. But I always have felt a real gratitude and affinity for farmers and feel that they very much have been pushed to this place with and incentivized, you know, through a whole range of avenues to engage in these practices that we've come to realize are really detrimental, not only to our health, you know, and the health of the environment, but to them and to their bottom line as well. So I think the film is really important in bringing forward an uplifting and sort of uniting and encouraging message, rather than one that is more dark and, fatalistic.
You need to change and we're going to force
right.
you
as opposed beat you into to, it, right?
We know you're not happy with this either. Let's fix it.
So is your family going to watch it? Are you getting your farm family to watch the film?
Well, I would like to think so. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's one of those things where my parents have their farmers are kind of absentee landowners at this point. So
sure. Yeah.
Sure. In that age.
I've got to say, I've been a participant in a dozen documentary films probably over the last, 10 years, and including some with, very high budgets and international distributorship. And I really think this one is the best. I think the message and just the cinematography and all of it is just so beautiful and so poignant and so powerful. So I'm grateful for my little tiny, whatever it is, minute or two or three or whatever in the film, because I think it's really, really great.
Yeah, and it's very powerful. I kind of was watching it and I'm thinking, they're going to hit this too. They're going to pull this in too, like they're hitting all of the things and they tied it together really beautifully. So back to you though, you mentioned you started at Reuters, as kind of an overall agricultural reporter. So how did you start the shift into bringing something to light that would otherwise be covered up if you weren't doing your work?
Yeah. And that, as you can see in this poster behind me or the books or whatever, the book, I guess, is what I called my first book, Whitewash, because I felt that so many truths of agriculture were being whitewashed by, this handful of very powerful corporations who basically dominate and control the market for seeds and chemicals in the agricultural space. And they've driven, public policies over the last several decades. They've concentrated the market. They've controlled the pricing. They've very much directed policy, not only in the United States, but in, major developed and developing nations around the world in terms of what kind of food is grown and how it's grown and who profits from it, and who suffers, you know, the problems from it, you know, the water pollution, the air pollution, the degradation of the soil that makes our plants and our food so much less nutritious. You know, all of the other impacts on biodiversity that we're seeing in terms of loss of pollinators. You know, there is a very real culpability and intentionality behind the policies that have gotten us to the place where we are. And it all comes down to, you could say, greed or capitalism, you know, but where the money flows. So that's what my work has been about the last decade or so, is really trying to expose that and get us to a place where we can rethink public policy, and start to rethink practices that we know are harming us and harming the, you know, our future generations. So, I mean, I started out in 1998 covering agriculture. I didn't know anything really about it at all. And so just dug in and started spending as much time as I could with farmers on farms, talking to farmers, talking to the companies, you know, Monsanto and Bayer and Syngenta and Dow and DuPont, and spending time with them. Spent a lot of time with Monsanto scientists and people at Syngenta and DuPont. You know, they had offices around here, especially Monsanto in St. Louis, and DuPont or Pioneer close by in the Des Moines area of Iowa. So I just, you know, got to know them. I spent time talking to regulators and scientists and agronomists and really trying to understand the industry from a holistic standpoint. And it became clear after a few years, you know, that the messaging that we were getting, that I was getting, and other reporters and the public was getting from the corporations that were driving agricultural policy and practices and products was not really what was happening on the ground. You know, they were telling us we weren't seeing weed resistance, we weren't seeing harm to biodiversity, we weren't seeing a demise in pollinators that was tied to the agrochemical industry. We weren't seeing, you know, water quality problems that were tied to excessive use of fertilizers. You know, all of these things that they were telling us weren't true. And so you first have to come to that recognition, what is true, you know, and we have to look at the hard facts, even if they're painful or ugly, if we're ever going to get to a better place. And so that's what I've been trying to do in my work and in my books.
Well, I think that that's amazing. And I think that's what should happen when you hire a journalist to cover something, is they should ask more questions and, I don't know, form an opinion and keep going from there.
Like
So
what you're doing, right?
I would hope so. I'm very ag centric, but I have been on both sides, which helps me reach ears that maybe wouldn't normally be open.
Well, and yeah, and I guess I think maybe a lot of my mom grew up in Chanute, Kansas. She was Miss Chanute when she was 18 years old, and you probably know Chanute then, Southeast.
Not from from PBS.
Oh yeah, okay. So
Yeah, Iola Ford's got Chanute. This is what
exactly,
I
exactly.
recognize.
So I spent a whole lot of time there when I was little, and you know, some of my mom's best friends, you know, we they one of them ran a dairy farm, one family ran a dairy farm, there was a hog operation, you know, wheat growers. So I spent a lot of time on farms, and I guess that's where I, you know, I said I didn't know a lot about farming, but I had a real love and appreciation for these people who worked the land and raised the animals and grew our food and still do, always have.
From
So
those experiences, how much has that changed when from when what you experienced as an adult?
well, you know, now, like I have a hat. I'll show you this. It's weird. I've got the background, you know, but I've got this hat. You see, it says Roundup on it. This is from a farmer in Chanute who, you know, I mean, this is, you know, what they gave them out, right? They give them all sorts of stuff. But yeah, they very much believe, you know, Roundup was God's gift to agriculture. You know, that But that changed, that evolved. You know, when I started covering agriculture in the late 90s, 1998, 99, 2000, the farmers were still telling me it is the best thing. GMO crops are the best. Glyphosate Roundup, it makes our lives so much easier. It works so great. But then by, you know, the mid to late 2000s, and then you get into 2009, 2010, 2011, it's not working as much. The weeds are resistant. They're having to bring in additional, spend money on additional inputs. Some in the South, cotton farmers couldn't even use enough chemical inputs to take care of all the super weeds. They were having to bring in hand laborers to help them with, you know, their costs were going up, their input needs were going up, their soil quality was going down. They were losing pollinators. They were, you know, you just started to hear more and more about the problems that were mounting. And now farmers in many areas really are on this treadmill, this cycle where they're having to use, you know, the dicamba and the 2,4-D along with the glyphosate, and they're having to buy these expensive seeds, or they think they have to buy these expensive seeds. And I don't know, I guess I don't blame the farmers so much as I blame our public policy makers and our government, our lawmakers, our regulators, who are slow to recognize that we need a really systemic change. And you know, they're getting there little by little. There are incentives that are popping up for cover crops and different things and crop rotation. But you know, I recall a few years ago, I was interviewing a conservation scientist for USDA, and he was going out to teach farmers. Part of his job was to teach farmers, you know, about the benefits of crop rotation and cover crops and all that kind of thing. And he said, but I'm not allowed to, like, say, use fewer synthetic pesticides. You know, I will get in trouble if I say that out loud. Because the agrochemical industry just has such a dominance in Washington, D.C. So it's very tricky to overcome, I think, a lot of the political hurdles that we need to overcome to get to kind of the simplified place of just going back to traditional farming practices and respecting Mother Nature and working with Mother Nature, as opposed to trying to constantly fight, you know, or outsmart Mother Nature with newer, better, bigger applications of chemicals. It's not a good long-term strategy.
In my community, I think the switch to Roundup Ready soybeans and Roundup Ready corn happened because of the fear of cross-pollination and then the fear of having those genetics in their crop and, you know, being accused of seed saving or being accused of not licensing that. What would you tell or recommend to a farmer who has those fears?
That if they don't pay the licensing fee, the technology fee for those patented crops, that they're going to get hit with
Well,
that application.
that's their fear that there will be some sort of cross-pollination or spread onto theirs. So it kind of became where you feared your neighbor. Oh, he's doing that. Now I have to because otherwise I could get sued.
Right. And you also have to do it to a degree to just protect the health of your crops, because if your crops aren't tolerant, aren't resistant to the pesticide that's being sprayed, whether it's a dicamba, you know, or a glyphosate, yeah, and your neighbor is spraying it and it drifts, more so an issue with dicamba, but drifts onto your field, your crops can be damaged or killed off, while his will survive and thrive. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you tell farmers like that. You know, you have to take into the risk and reward account, you know, ratio, I guess, if for every person, every decision is made based on different, you know, context and perspective. But certainly, you know, farmers who are paying up, paying the premiums for the patented seeds and paying for the inputs that go along with that, there's a pretty high cost there, as
Sure.
it's going. So I don't know. I mean, I've heard that from farmers when I've talked to them, but it more so, at least what I would hear from farmers is, this is what they've been doing for years. It's, you know, it's part of their system. They've got it down. Change is always a little scary, right? Especially when you have to do such a big change. And how many years is it going to take? And how is that going to affect farm finances? And how is that going to affect our insurance programs? You know, it's more than tweaking one or two things, I think. It's a bigger question than just let's not use GMO crops anymore, right? It's a really systemic change that is needed on all levels, from the farm field to, you know, the halls of Congress, really.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it's a documentation of intention situation for them.
Right.
But
Although, I mean, I don't know. Clear, you know, in the days when Monsanto was a standalone company, clearly they had a reputation, and they did go out and pursue farmers, and they had their spies or investigators out in the fields across, you know, the Midwest and elsewhere, looking for farmers who might either accidentally or intentionally be using their technology without paying for it. But since they've been acquired by Bayer, I haven't really heard much about that still going on. Do you think that's still going on to a degree?
I haven't heard of it going on. I wonder if the stories that I hear now are residual stories.
They sure were aggressive, definitely for the first, you know, 20 some years after introducing the technology, maybe 25, but I don't know if Bayer does that anymore. It was such a black mark for Monsanto. You know, it really gave them a terrible reputation that Bayer was trying to turn around.
Well, that's definitely promising to know that much. So what are you working on now? I mean, Common Ground was probably a blip until recently when you've had all of these press interviews and things like that, but you have your books. Are you continuing to write and investigate?
Well, I am. What I'm looking at now is paraquat, actually. I was fortunate enough to obtain, gosh, 50 years of 40 to 50 years of internal corporate documents for Syngenta, and published a multiple part investigation in The Guardian, and then in a new outlet that I'm managing called The New Lead, which is a project of the Environmental Working Group. But yeah, so we're pursuing investigations looking at other pesticides and other company secrets that are coming to light. We're also looking at PFAS, and you know, just there's a real pattern of misconduct that you see when you look behind the corporate veil of companies and their products and what they tell the consumer about the risks and what they internally discuss about the risks. And when you see that they're telling the public something that is very different from what they're talking about internally, you know, it's always kind of jaw-dropping. And we're seeing many of the same secrets that I was able to reveal and write about in my two books related to Monsanto. We're seeing the same thing, you know, with Syngenta, with relation to paraquat and several other companies. So that's what I'm working on right now, I guess. But there's also, I'll just mention, you might mention it in your piece. I don't know like what kind of piece you're trying, you know, if it's specific only to Common Ground, but there's another film called Into the Weeds, which I don't know if you've heard about, but it also came out this year. It's by a Canadian filmmaker. I could send you information about that, but it is really specific to glyphosate and Monsanto. It kind of has the same theme as Common Ground to a degree, but it just focuses on Monsanto and kind of what Monsanto's done to farmers and the Roundup trials and that kind of thing. So
No, I'll make sure to have that mentioned and look into it myself. I'm a big promoter. I'm not so much a scientist myself or even a farmer at the moment, but promoter.
I should say, caveat, Into the Weeds, I spent a lot of time with those people. Like they really, they didn't know anything about agriculture. Like, they were not agricultural people. So they had me like really hold their hand for 2 years of their product project.
What do you
I'm
think?
not,
What do you think was their drive getting started with the project?
They watched the, they did a big piece called Anthropocene, a documentary on Anthropocene, which is sort of the, you know, human impacts. They documented human impacts on the environment around the globe. It's an incredible film. Like, it blew my mind. And then they started taking a look at the Roundup trials in California, and they were just so like blown away by that huge storybook kind of first victory with Lee Johnson. And of course, I wrote the book about that trial. And so then they came to me and said, "Hey, can you introduce us to all these people and tell us all this stuff?" I'm not really in that film. I mean, I'm not. They use some clips of me on TV in there, but I'm not in it. So I'm not trying to get you to write about it because I'm in it. I'm more in Common Ground than I'm in that film. But they both just seem kind of on that, a part of the same conversation, I guess, is a way to say it.
Well, just this is a really general question. Where do you see things heading in the future? I mean, as maybe as a two-part question, as the industry and then culturally, what are you seeing?
I think that regenerative agriculture is an idea and an issue that can't be ignored or turned away from at this point of where we are in the evolution of our environment and of our health. You see acknowledgement of it even in the big agrochemical companies. They're all starting to look for a way to be a player in regenerative agriculture. Without having to give up, you know, their profit streams. But you're seeing acknowledgement of it from the companies. You're seeing acknowledgement of it in the halls of Congress to a degree, in a few lawmakers who are wanting to try to talk about this. From my perspective, I'm seeing a very gradual shift around the edges of the political forces that have been putting up walls to this. I see those walls starting to come down. And then I see you see farmers who are all over this. Like, you know, Gabe Brown is not alone out there. There are hundreds and hundreds of farmers, maybe thousands. I'm aware of hundreds who are actively working on this right now and saying, "We've seen what happens when we don't work with Mother Nature, and we're not going to do that anymore." I profiled a group of farmers that go, they call themselves the Idea Network, and they are practicing and studying and analyzing every regenerative idea you could ever imagine and documenting it with videos. And they're reporting back to academics and writing papers and, you know, really trying to be a collective force for understanding down to the minute detail, like what kind of row spacing should we use for this particular rotation, and then what particular cover crop should we use during this season, if we plant this over, you know, all these different calculations to try to get the best yields and compare yields. And they're finding in many cases, you know, there are ways to meet or beat yields of conventional crops used with synthetic pesticides. Just as Gabe Brown lays out in the film, you know, that you can do it, you can make more money, you can be more protective of the earth and its inhabitants, all of them. And they're studying this and trying to push it forward. So that's a way long answer.
No, I
So
think that's
I
great. What
see
was the name of
it.
that
Studying
network?
some of the IDEA Network, I
Oh,
could
okay.
send you IDEA, and it stands for, I always forget. But they're super cool. And they have a I'm on a listserv kind of thing where, like, you know, all of hundreds of them are on an email chain, and they email each other videos and information about, you know, this and this and this. And some of it is so granular. Like, I can introduce you to some of them if you wanted to, but
Yeah.
it's super cool. And they're great just for sources too, you know. So I'm just looking at that here. Yeah. But I'll send you an article on that.
Sure. People are starting to freak out a little bit. The house is on fire, and they're like, oh, we need to do
That's a
something
very
different.
good quote. You're right. I mean, the house is on fire. And the thing that I guess we haven't talked about, but that Common Ground does so beautifully is it shows not just the houses on fire part, but the how to put it out, like how to not only restore the health, you know, of the soil, right? Which is the big part of it, I guess, which adds more nutrients to the plants, which is healthier for us, but how it can really mitigate to a degree greenhouse gas emissions, you know, and climate change and sequester carbon in the soil and just overall have so many benefits for us that I think people, so many, like my neighbors and others, people who don't live on a farm or live in a rural area so often are like, it doesn't affect me. You know, that's not part of my world, but it does. It directly affects you. If you're someone who eats food or drinks water, you're affected by these issues every single day. So you should care and you should pay attention and you should inform yourself and you should engage in a conversation so that we can have public policies and practices that are more protective of our health. I mean, look at what we're leaving our kids right now. If we don't change, you know, look at rising rates of cancers and diseases and developmental problems and the demise of so many important species and the quality of our air. My goodness, if you look at reports from the government that look at air quality and water quality, there's no question as to why we're so sick. There's no question as to why 40% of people living in the United States are expected to get cancer in their lifetime. I don't know if you've ever heard that statistic before.
I haven't.
Every time I say it just, the National Cancer Institute, go look it up. Our big focus is on living with cancer. Let's learn to live with it. Let's have more treatments. Let's have more drugs. Chemotherapy, radiation. People with cancer are living, surviving cancer now. Well, great, but maybe we shouldn't accept that we're just gonna get cancer. Maybe we should try to clean up our world.
Well, that just seems too reasonable.
It's crazy when you go down that rabbit hole and you start looking at rates of disease, rates of childhood cancers, and you start looking at the scientific journals and the studies and the National Institutes of Health reports and everything that shows very clearly how chemical pollution, agrochemicals, and other types of chemical compounds are so directly tied to rising rates of cancers, reproductive health, neurodevelopmental problems. It's insane.
I am wondering, in addition to your books and the films that you've mentioned, where else can people find you and follow you online?
So the new lead, which is LEDE, the new lead is a startup journalism project, but we're putting out, you know, really as hard-hitting and scientific environmental news as we can on a small staff. You can also Google Guardian, The Guardian, which is a big international news outlet, and Carrie Gillum, and you can see my work there. And then in these films, and I do some public speaking, I'd love people to check out my first book, Whitewash, and the second one, The Monsanto Papers. And thanks for bringing attention to these issues and this film. I think it's a beautiful film. I hope everyone will go watch it.
Is there anything else you want to leave us with? I don't want to take too much of your time.
The only thing I would say, if I have get one last line, is just please, people, don't put your head in the sand. Don't turn away from this. This is not only our future, but the future for our children. You know, if they're going to have a healthy future or even just a chance at a healthy future, it really does start with the land and how we grow our food. the quality of our food, the quality of our air, the quality of our water. And that's what all of this is about. So I can't imagine anything more important than the future for my kids. And I hope other people feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Carrie, well, thank you for your time. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Kansas Rural Center Presents. The rural paper should be hitting your mailboxes both at home and digitally soon. In this issue, you'll find an article relating to the interview, as well as our end-of-year staff updates, Tim Carpenter's interview with Paul Johnson and Nick Lewandowski, a brief history of CASAC, our board member spotlight featuring Karen Willey, a look at Ryan's Urban Ag Tour in Fayetteville, Arkansas, an overview of the upcoming Farm Beginnings training. Please look into this if you're a beginning farmer. Mental health strategies for the winter months, Dick Arboretum's Learning About Leaves article, and OFA's insights from the Pipeline Foods bankruptcy. Give it a read and let us know what you want in the next edition of the Rural Papers.